You are listening to the Pronk Pop Show, presented by Raymond Thomas Pronk, the People's Paladin Pronk, propagating faith, family, friends, freedom, first. Broadcasted by Renaissance Radio, Radiating Reason, and KDUX Web Radio. Podcasted by PronkPops.wordpress.com and KDUX Web Radio. WordPress.com. You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas, with a voice of Richland College. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of KDUX Web Radio, Richland College, or the Dallas County Community College District. Welcome to the Pronk Pop Show. This is the Friday edition. And yes, I will have an update of the Senate trial, impeachment trial of Donald Trump. But I'll save that for later. It looks like, however, it's going to go on to next week, and the final vote will be Wednesday. I'll probably cover the closing arguments that are now scheduled for Monday. I was hoping they would wrap it up today, Friday, but they're not. They decided to prolong the waste of time and money. I'm mentioning it here. I'll cover it very, very briefly at the end. The news is that there won't be new evidence or witnesses. The vote was along partisan lines, 51-49. I still maintain if you listen to all the evidence, the hearings, unfortunately most people don't. My firm belief, if you're objective about it, the vote should be 100-0 for acquittal. This impeachment should never have happened. It's a travesty of justice. It's falsely accusing the President of the United States of a non-crime. It's a complete partisan impeachment. It was rushed for political reasons, and they don't have a case. The evidence is not with them. The facts are not with them. The law is not with them. The Constitution's not with them. But we have some liars, Democrats, that are ideologues that hate Donald Trump, and this shouldn't proceed. You see, I'm not a Democrat or Republican. I'm an admirer and defender of the Constitution, and this violates the Constitution as far as I'm concerned. That's the threat. This is what little tyrants do, dictators do. It's a dangerous precedent, and it should be batted down. And I think the Democrats are going to pay a very, very high price come next November. Now, what else is in the news? Well, if you're listening, and I'm not talking about the Super Bowl, I don't follow sports, and I won't be covering the Super Bowl, but it is Sunday. I understand it's Sunday, and it's between San Francisco and Kansas City. Do I have a favorite? No, I really don't care. And for those that follow football, are going to be at the Super Bowl, have a good time, and then fly home. Who will win? I don't know. I guess the favorite is Kansas City, but who knows? On any given day, someone can have a very good day or a very bad day, and you need to keep that in mind. What I really want to focus on is what millions of not only Americans, but people around the world, it's in the news. But again, it's politicians and media panicking people. And I'm talking about the coronavirus. It's really a family of viruses. You would think that it's the breakout of the plague. And some are even referring to the 18 really deadly influenza, so-called Spanish flu. And that's a big hint. There are a whole bunch of viruses. Smallpox, for example, is one. But in terms of the flu, the biggest one, the killer, was the 1918 virus that spread around the world. We should really look at it in terms of the population of a country and what viruses are deadly. And if you do that, the coronavirus is not yet spreading around the world. Oh, yeah, we have cases in a number of countries. And I think the latest estimate at the number of cases in China is approaching or about ready to go over 20,000. edit it. Many, many people have had the flu. I've had the flu. In December, I got the flu. I had cough, mostly coughs to get it out, but also a slight fever for 1 or 2 days, and I was fatigued. All the symptoms, I'm just giving you the symptoms of a flu or a cold, same thing. I was coughing. Was it the worst cough I've ever had? No, it was somewhat persistent, but it was sort of fits of coughing. But this happens across the United States every year, and that's point number one. And people, there's nothing they can do about it. The advice is go home and sleep and drink fluids. Rest is recommended. What I did is I did have some cough syrup that I used, but it took me a couple of days. Usually it takes about a week from start to end, sometimes shorter, sometimes longer. And that's typical of most Americans. Ask them, they have the flu. Now, there's a push on to have a flu shot. And you need to understand viruses, if you look at the long term, who gets hit the most is young people and old people. But the 1918 influenza really hit younger adults. It was deadly. It killed over 600,000 Americans. The new estimates is somewhere, we don't know, we'll never know the exact number, but somewhere between 50 and 100 million people. And that was 100 years ago, 101 now, you know, 101 years ago. Now, why am I bringing this up? Ladies and gentlemen, through 2019, we've had a little over 10,000 deaths in the United States. Not a couple of hundred like in China or one or two in the surrounding area. And I know I say that, well, who's he? He doesn't know, blah, 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 blah. Okay, let's listen to this report.
Dr. Anthony Fauci, he is a member of President Trump's Coronavirus Task Force and director of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Disease. He joins us now from Bethesda, Maryland. Thanks so much for speaking to us. There really is international panic now about this virus, but put into perspective and the fact that, you know, your average flu kills thousands of people every year in many countries. Do you think the coronavirus is really that dangerous?
You know, one of the things that I think it's important to point out is that this is an evolving situation in which we really don't know what is going to happen. In other words, how much it's going to accelerate. It's been accelerating, particularly in China. But you're absolutely correct. One of the things that we've learned with outbreak observation is that a real danger that you know of, even though it's a serious danger, like we're in the middle of a seasonal flu this year, which in the United States has killed about 10,000 people and has had well over 100,000 hospitalizations, and people generally understand it and take it casually. It's the fear of the unknown which causes the panic that you're talking about. So right now, there's a serious situation in China. Will this turn into a global outbreak of the extent to which you see in China? We don't know that. I think the public health measures that people are taking in different countries as travel-related cases come in to identify, to isolate, and to do contact tracing in many places, including the United States, has prevented there from being an outbreak. Whether or not we're able to control this until this outbreak dies down naturally is unclear. But I think when people see on television what's going on in China, the somewhat almost chaos that's going on there and fear, then what happens is that they extrapolate that to themselves in their own country. Right. I think that would be premature. But right now, for example, in the United States, although we take this very seriously, because the Chinese, unfortunately, are really suffering from this, in the United States, the risk is still low, but it might change. And that's the point. We've got to be careful that we're not too casual about it, because the risk can change.
Right. We have to get the right balance. But I mean, okay, as far as prevention is concerned, I mean, the fact that China has built a hospital in 8 days and another is almost complete from what we're hearing. Does it give you confidence, really, that all measures are being taken to contain this virus?
Well, it depends. When you say all measures, you mean in China? Well, China is doing things that are really quite draconian and dramatic. For example, as you probably know, they have shut down the travel and the ability to move freely of about 55 million people, including the entire 11 million people city of Wuhan, That is something that really is somewhat unprecedented in any way in epidemic control. So they are being very aggressive now. They were a little bit slow in the beginning, but right now they're being quite aggressive.
Do you welcome that aggressive approach?
Well, I think they really feel they have no choice because of how it's accelerating in China. And that's one of the things that I think we need to just give them the benefit of the doubt that what they're doing right now is something that is appropriate in order to contain the spread of the virus.
Did you hear that number, 10,000? I have a lot of statistics on it. And that's influenza, not the coronavirus. There's been no deaths in the United States. Very few cases in the United States. And yeah, we're on it. We're quarantining people, isolating them for, well, let me give you a rundown. Usually you get a range. There's some people that get no symptoms. Usually it takes 1 to 14 days before you show the symptoms. And the important thing to keep in mind, it is spread from human to human. It's suspected that it crossed from animals, and we're not sure which ones, cats, rats, for example, to humans. But what you need to understand, okay, you get the symptoms, and most people, the overall majority of people, they have a flu, or think of it as a cold, and in a week to 10 days, they're well. If they go to the hospital, they discharge them after a couple of days. Keep in mind, there's really nothing. They have no cure for it. There's no vaccine that's been developed. It takes usually about 6 months once you have an effective vaccine to fully test it, and that's in the works. But there's really nothing you can do other than go home, sleep, rest, drink liquids, and when you're well, you don't have a fever, you don't have a cough, you don't have a runny nose, then you can go back to work. For example, the call that I got, I suspected I got it in a class from a teacher in the class. And that's something to point out. If you work, for example, you're an instructor or someone on the staff, the temptation is to go work. You got a job to do. And that's one way it spread. Now, I'm not blaming the teacher. Someone gave it to her. It does spread from human to human when people cough or sneeze. That's the risk you run if you're living. People get colds, especially where there's a lot of people. Now, obviously, if you stay home in a room forever, I'm not saying you won't get a disease. Most people can't do that. Most people have to shop for food and have to work. Keep that in mind. What you should be concerned about, though, is should a influenza flu that is an epidemic, it is spreading, hopefully it won't become a pandemic where the sheer numbers, instead of being 10,000, would be hundreds of thousands and is spreading around the world. That's what you don't want. You don't want another so-called Spanish flu. Now, it didn't occur in Spain. Many people think it started in the United States. We're not sure where it started, but it spread and it killed somewhere between 50 and 100 million people. And over 600,000 in the United States. And you'll get various statistics, and they do change over time. It's not that you shouldn't be concerned. It's you shouldn't panic, and you shouldn't let the media panic you. Now, most have done a good job, but I remember when Ebola, which is another virus, and a deadly virus at that, was in Dallas. And I didn't live too far from where it was, in terms of where one person had it. But it was contained. You need to be concerned about it. You need to take the proper measures depending on how it spread. But what you shouldn't do is what I think some of the media are doing. It's panicking people. And it looks like in China, I won't say they're panicking. They have, let me put it in context. China has over 1,500 million people. I think the latest statistics, I'm not going to give the exact number because it's going to be wrong, but over 300 people have died from it. Now, for you, that might consider a lot, but the area, Wuhan, the city, has over 11 million people and looks like a ghost village because why? People are staying home. For 2 weeks, they stay home. And eventually it burns out and then people come back out and work. Now, given you're in a totalitarian regime or authoritarian regime, communist China, they can tell you to stay home and you will stay home. Now, you need to get some food and stock up in food, but they know that over time, people, it just takes its course. It's very much like a common cold. As a matter of fact, most people would think, like I did, I got a cold. I know it was a virus. And I think I told you the worst time I've ever had the flu when I was in the Air Force. I was ordered with everyone in my organization to get a flu shot. I did, and became violently sick the next 2 days. That's the worst, but one of the worst times I've had the flu. This time, from a vaccination, I'm just one of the unlucky ones. Not everyone had that problem, but I did. I will also say there was one time I thought I was going to die. I was really sick from the flu. This is years ago. I've never been sick. I was going to say I've never been as sick before. That's not true. What usually happens with people that have this? It turns into pneumonia, and you die of pneumonia. I think I was about 6 or 7 years old. I was in Germany with my parents. My father was stationed there, and I got pneumonia. And for 12 days, every day, had to go to the hospital and get a shot, and I was very ill. You better believe I was very ill. But I recovered. And that's the problem with these viruses. They can develop into pneumonia, and you get water in the lungs. And long story short, you can die. I can remember, for example, it wasn't me, but I was a Boy Scout, and I was in Taiwan, and the troop went on a hike. I think it was a 3 or 4 day hike. And one of the people, one of the adults supervising it, came down with a cold that turned into pneumonia. And within 3 days, he was dead. It happens. And that's why it's important if it gets serious to go to the hospital. Now, with viruses, there's very little. They really can do nothing for you. It's pneumonia, though, that they can treat with penicillin in this case. However, I became allergic to penicillin because of this episode, so now I can't have the shots. But have I had pneumonia ever since? No, this was years ago, decades ago. Everyone is different in terms of their age, in terms of the gender they are or sex, and their physical health and how they react to it. Remember, you're not going to get out of here alive. Everyone is going to die. We don't know when. We should be concerned about health risk. I'm certainly concerned about it, but I don't panic or worry about this because you need perspective. You need to basically understand what's going on. It comes through, the virus enters through either the mouth or the nose, and I do have sinuses because I have a broken nose, deviated septum, and I do get, especially in the fall, I do get hay fever and take Sudafed for it. Actifed, used to take Actifed. And because of that, I occasionally get runny noses. But you take medicine for it. If you stop it early, it's not an issue. And it will invade the cells of the lung. And the people most seriously affected are either very young people and very old people. Children and people in their 60s, 70s or older. But again, doesn't mean everyone gets it. And there are various types of flu. This is not going to be a show about the types of flu. What I'm trying to make clear is that the coronavirus is being taken care of seriously. You better believe it, because the United States declared a health emergency. I'll play a little bit of that, too. And so do the World Health Organization. But the people there know what I'm telling you. They know these statistics. And it's something, like the doctor said, we don't know how this is going to turn out. We don't. If it spreads rapidly, that's a problem. But the real danger is, how deadly is it? Is it? How many people that get it actually die? And we've had thousands that have gotten it. There are confirmed cases, though, of about over 2,000 so far, and I think that's understated, and over 300 deaths so far. And that's certainly going to go up. And China is taking it so seriously, it's closed down transportation to 10 of their largest cities. So they're somewhat panicked about it. I think they are panicking. But they have a lot of people in cities, millions in cities, and they don't want it to spread from city to city to city. As remember, when this started, it was the Chinese New Year. So people typically travel and visit their family during, you know, those holidays. So the whole purpose of this show and this story is keep it in perspective. Don't panic. Get smart on it. Know the symptoms. You get a stuffy nose. I get a stuffy nose, mainly because sinuses. And every night, no, I shouldn't say every night, but recently, I've had a stuffy nose. It started out with me with a sore throat and coughing, but I'm over it. This was late November, early December. I still have some coughing, though. Some coughing issues, which tells me there's a few of my lung cells still have it. You got to get it out of your system. And the symptoms, it ranges from, at the high end, severe, to either no symptoms or very little symptoms. The key thing is the onset of this is very, very sudden. I'm talking influenza. A cold is a little bit different. The symptoms are milder. Both you have fatigue. I had fatigue. I was tired. I felt tired. But in a cold, the onset is rather gradual. I thought I had a virus. I don't know what one. I really didn't care. What I did is I stayed home. And I got over it, like I said, within a week. It typically ran the typical course. So become aware of the symptoms, the big three or fever. I had a little fever, but not much. A cough I definitely had, and stuff up nose. And I took Benzedrine and Sudafed, mainly to make sure that my nose was unstuffed. I didn't really have a runny nose. The thing I was careful of, though, because you can take too much of the medicine and really dry it out. Now, in China, they're checking the temperature. Fine with me, but it was only really a few hours and a few days that I really felt any temperature, and it wasn't a very high temperature. I knew I had it, but for most of the time, the symptoms was coughing was the problem. And if you listen to my shows, you see myself. I do post-production. I was coughing. So I wanted to give you this update. I think this is being way overblown in the news. And I think there is a degree of panic, but you need to see where this goes. Obviously, if suddenly thousands of cases that are diagnosed as coronaviruses occur and, you know, hundreds start dying in the United States, then yes, it's going to get a lot more attention. But I really don't think that's happening, because what's happened also, flights to and from China, most U.S. airlines have stopped them. If you're a regular listener, you know this. For every show I give you my show prep, or at least most of it. And that can be articles, it can be YouTube videos, it could be graphics, images. This is a very heavy graphic images. I did go really far. I went too far. Now, I would say if you feel that the symptoms are really severe, go to your hospital. Go to your doctor. Go to your hospital. Now, I didn't do it. Let me just say, I could have gone to a doctor or hospital. I just did not believe the symptoms were that severe. And like I said, I had one case, I forget, it was at least 5-10 years ago, where I thought I was dying. I felt fatigue. I just felt terrible. But within about 10 days, it went away. So it's up to each individual. It's going to affect each individual differently. You know, let me say a point here. In China, they have an epidemic of this flu. It depends on the numbers, though. What we don't want is a pandemic when you're really talking hundreds of thousands to millions of deaths. We're not anywhere near that now. And that's the important point. Now, there's always suspicion of information out of China. I think this time they're being more forthcoming. This is in the White House today.
I'm Alex Azar, Secretary of Health and Human Services and Chairman of the President's Task Force on the Novel Coronavirus. I'm going to start by turning things over to Dr. Robert Redfield, the Director of the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, to discuss the current situation on the novel coronavirus. Dr. Redfield?
Thank you, Mr. Secretary. Let me give you an update on the current situation of the novel coronavirus. First, though, I want to emphasize that this is a serious health situation in China, but I want to emphasize that the risk to the American public currently is low. Our goal is to do all we can do to keep it that way. Second, I want to recognize the concern that the American public may have, and I want to reiterate what I just said. Currently, the risk to the American public is low. As of today, there are nearly 9,700 cases in China, with more than 200 deaths. Additionally, currently, there are another 23 countries that have confirmed totally 132 cases. This also includes 12 individuals who have been confirmed in 6 countries who did not travel to China. CDC has launched an aggressive public health response focused on early case recognition, isolation of those cases identified, and contact tracing around those individuals. This response is a layered response, which includes both targeted airport screening as well as heightened education and awareness of the American healthcare community to be vigilant in ascertaining the possibility of recent travel to China when they are evaluating patients with upper respiratory tract infection. To date, we have confirmed 6 cases of this novel virus in the United States. Most recent case had no travel history to China, but was a close personal contact of one of the previous cases that we had identified through our aggressive contact tracing. In addition, there are currently 191 individuals that are under investigation. Once again, I want to emphasize that this is a significant global situation and it continues to evolve. But I also want to emphasize again that the risk at this time to the American public is low. Mr. Secretary.
Thank you, Dr. Redfield. I would now like to invite Dr. Anthony Fauci, the director of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Disease, to discuss the underlying rationale for the actions that I will be discussing after he concludes. Dr. Fauci.
Thank you very much, Mr. Secretary. The concept that's underlying the action that you'll hear about shortly is the issue of the unknown aspects of this particular outbreak. So let me enumerate just a few of these. I can start off by putting it into perspective by telling you I often get asked, we have an influenza outbreak here. We have about 8,000 deaths already. We have about 100,000 hospitalizations. Why are we paying such attention? And why are we doing the kinds of things we're doing here right now? Well, the reason is, despite the morbidity and mortality with influenza, there's a certainty, for example, of seasonal flu. I can tell you all guaranteed that as we get into March and April, the flu cases are going to go down. You could predict pretty accurately what the range of the mortality is and the hospitalizations, as we've done over the years. The issue now with this is that there's a lot of unknowns. As you can see just from the media, the number of cases have steeply inclined each and every day. You know that in the beginning, we were not sure if there were asymptomatic infection, which would make it a much broader outbreak than what we're seeing. Now we know for sure that there are. It was not clear whether an asymptomatic person could transmit it to someone while they were asymptomatic. Now we know from a recent report from Germany that that is absolutely the case. There are a number of countries outside of China that have travel-related cases, and now what we're seeing is that there are secondary cases from them, and as Bob mentioned, we also have that in this country. The WHO has issued, as you know, a public health emergency of international concern declaration. If you put all these things together, I underscore what Bob said. We still have a low risk to the American public, but we want to keep it at a low risk. And because there are so many unknowns here, we're going to take the action that the Secretary will describe in a temporary way to make sure we mitigate as best as we possibly can this risk. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Fauci. Today, President Trump took decisive action to minimize the risk of the spread of novel coronavirus in the United States. Since taking office, President Trump has been clear. His top priority is the safety of the American people. In addition to the steps that the doctors have outlined, we continue to operationalize a multi-layered, cross-agency public health response. Following the World Health Organization's decision to declare the 2019 novel coronavirus a public health emergency of international concern, I have today declared that the coronavirus presents a public health emergency in the United States. The actions we have taken and continue to take complement the work of China and the World Health Organization to contain the outbreak within China. In accordance with the declaration, beginning at 5 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, Sunday, February the 2nd, the United States government will implement temporary measures to increase our abilities to detect and contain the coronavirus proactively and aggressively. any U.S. citizen returning to the United States who has been in Hubei province in the previous 14 days will be subject to up to 14 days of mandatory quarantine to ensure they are provided proper medical care and health screening. To be clear, this applies only to U.S. citizens who have been in Hubei province in the past 14 days prior to their attempted entry into the United States. Any U.S. citizen returning to the United States who has been in the rest of mainland China within the previous 14 days will undergo proactive entry health screening at a select number of ports of entry and up to 14 days of monitored self-quarantine to ensure they've not contracted the virus and do not pose a public health risk. Additionally, the President has signed a presidential proclamation using his authority pursuant to Section 212F of the Immigration and Nationality Act, temporarily suspending the entry into the United States of foreign nationals who pose a risk of transmitting the 2019 novel coronavirus. As a result, foreign nationals, other than immediate family of U.S. citizens and permanent residents who have traveled in China within the last 14 days, will be denied entry into the United States for this time. Once again, these actions will become effective at 5 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, Sunday, February 2nd. These prudent, targeted, and temporary actions will decrease the pressure on public health officials screening incoming travelers, expedite the processing of U.S. citizens and permanent residents returning from China, and ensure resources are focused on the health and safety of the American people. I want to stress, the risk of infection for Americans remains low, and with these and our previous actions, we are working to keep the risk low. All agencies are working aggressively to monitor this continually evolving situation and to keep the public informed in a constantly transparent way. The United States appreciates China's efforts and coordination with public health officials across the globe and continues to encourage the highest levels of transparency. It is likely that we will continue to see more cases in the United States in the coming days and weeks, including some limited person-to-person transmission. The American public can be assured the full weight of the U.S. government is working to safeguard the health and safety of the American people. I'd now like to invite Deputy Secretary of State Steve Biegun for an update.
Good afternoon, and thank you, Secretary Azar. My name is Steve Biegun. I'm the Deputy Secretary of State, and I represent the State Department, the President's novel coronavirus task force. Let me describe briefly the role of the Department of State in the proceedings of this task force and our contributions. Our first responsibility is to monitor events on the ground in China where we have the presence of U.S. diplomats and to give clear and accurate advice to American citizens and, in particular, American travelers considering visiting or staying in China. In this particular case, this includes identifying any health or safety risks to which they may be subjected, but also, very importantly, identifying their access to essential services such as health care in parts of China that are affected by this coronavirus. China has an excellent health care system, but in parts of the country, it is simply overwhelmed in the accessibility to that health care for any reason, including potential infection, but also any other type of accident in need of medical care may be compromised during the Chinese government's own treatment of the consequences of this virus. Finally, we also make our judgments based upon any obstacles, particularly obstacles to movement, that American citizens might face in the country. And in China, we have seen barriers to travel both within and without China, as well as between the United States and China. And so we have given prudent advice over the course of the week to American citizens in order for them to allow them to make the best possible choices for them.
Let me sum it up. Don't go to China until this outbreak of the flu is over with. If you're in China, you probably be advised, if you can, to get out. If you come back to the United States, they probably will quarantine you for a period of time. And if you're a foreign national that wants to come in the United States but have been in China, you're not going to be able to get in. Makes sense to me. I think it's the proper precautions. One more clip, and this is the World Health Organization.
A public health emergency of international concern over the global outbreak of novel coronavirus. Our greatest concern is the potential for the virus to spread to countries with weaker health systems and which are ill-prepared to deal with it.
That was the head of the World Health Organization. Their concern is it spread to other nations, and they've declared an emergency, a global health emergency. So that's my take on it. I think it's precautions, but are we dying in the streets? No. My greatest fear is we're not focusing enough attention on the fact that thousands every year, tens of thousands of Americans die from influenza. Hopefully that never goes into a pandemic again, but if it does, that's where you see hundreds of thousands and millions die. We haven't had one in a while. For sure, the worst one was 1918. There's an excellent book you can read on it, if you're so inclined, by Barry, that really goes into it. I don't have time to play a clip. I was thinking about it. He gave an address on what are the lessons that we've learned. But we need to be, I think, more vigilant there. Now, one other final story, and that's the what's happening in the Senate. They did vote 51-49 not to call any witnesses. No surprise there. Although there could have been a surprise. 51 no, 49 yes to call witnesses and more documents. My point, and the Republican attorneys are making this point, is the House Intelligence Committee did not do their job. They called 18 witnesses. 17 of them gave their opinions. Most of them were not in on the phone call at all. They had differences, foreign policy differences. And they could have called as many as they wanted. But what was wrong with the process? They rushed this. They tried to get it done before the Christmas holidays. That's problem number one. Problem number two is the articles impeachment was poorly drafted. They don't have a crime, and they really don't have an impeachable offense. If they wanted more witnesses and evidence, they should have properly subpoenaed those witnesses. They didn't do that. The people that they called, the House had not had a vote on impeachment. And I'm sure the Republican legal counsel for the president is going to go over that. If you listen to the hearings or this trial, you come to the same conclusion I did. This was a unconstitutional, illegal impeachment, very partisan. Not one Republican voted for it in the House, and I think the same vote will be in the Senate, and maybe one or two or maybe more Democrats will vote against finding the president guilty. As a matter of fact, as far as I'm concerned, if you really are listening to all the evidence, the facts, the law, the Constitution, the vote should be 100-0. It's nowhere close to that. And we'll learn exactly what it will be Wednesday. And that's the important date. Monday we'll hear, and I will cover, and this will be the last prolonged coverage of this, I will broadcast the closing arguments of the Republicans. I'm not going to waste my time with the Democrats. In my mind, they didn't have a case. Forget a weak case. They didn't have a case. They never should have gone forward with this. This was a smear campaign, a progressive propaganda smear campaign. And it had a number of objectives besides trying to get Trump out. I don't think they seriously thought they could do it. This is really directed at Senator Snow, that's up for re-election. I don't think it worked there. I think what the Democrats miscalculated, and I think big time, was the fact that the American people, the ones that are paying attention, don't like this. I didn't vote for Trump or Hillary Clinton. I don't like this. This is what I would consider a coup, another failed coup of the deep state. And this one I really deeply resent. So I've decided the way to punish politicians is to vote them out of office and vote for the other guy. In this case, it'll be Donald Trump and who's ever is the Republican candidate. And what I recommend you do is if you share my view on this, not everybody does, is to do the same thing. Throw the bums out. Throw all the Democratic bums out. Next year, you can vote the Republicans out. With that, thank you for listening. And now, America, the beautiful. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of KDUX Web Radio, Richland College, or the Dallas County Community College District. You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas. With the voice of Richland College. You are listening to the Pronk Pop Show, presented by Raymond Thomas Pronk, the People's Paladin Pronk, propagating faith, family, friends, freedom first. Broadcasted by Renaissance Radio, Radiating Reason, and KDUX Web Radio. Podcasted by PronkPops.wordpress.com and KDUX Web Radio.wordpress.com.